Welcome to CSE 76. Tonight's section is Java 101A. This is an addendum to a lot of the same stuff that Dan went over last night in the Java 101 lecture. And we're basically going to give some useful tips and hints, and mostly going over printing, standard errors, and formatting. The first thing you need to do is install Java. For those of you with a Mac, it's nice and simple. If you've run Software Update, you have a version of Java. If you've got a PC, I actually think it's a little bit more straightforward because you can control the installation of the JDK and where you're putting it, et cetera, et cetera. The link is java.sun.com/downloads, as you'll see right here. Let's show you what the screen looks like. Let's get to the Java JDK. And as you can see, let me zoom in a little bit so people can see that a little bit better. We want to be downloading the JDK, not the JRE. JRE is just the Java runtime environment, which doesn't allow you to compile, since this class involves writing programming languages. You sort of need to compile, so we're going to be wanting to pull down the Java Development Kit, which is the JDK. I also prefer having the Java docs installed as well, so that you've got the API and all the notes that Dan alluded to in the lecture on your PC. So if you're running into a place where you don't have internet access, you've still got access to the documentation. The installation instructions are pretty simple. It walks you exactly through what you need to be doing on your PC. Not so much for the Macintosh, because again, as I said previously, Software Update takes care of installing the version of Java for you. Once you follow the instructions using the once you install the Java compiler, the next thing you want to do is check to make sure your paths are set up correctly, and check the version that you've put up. As I said, you're just checking to see what version you have. Let's pull this up in the terminal so that we can show this a little bit better. Okay. And this shows you what version you're running. The only downside is if you're just running the JRE, this will still work. What you need to do is run Java C, the compiler, which won't be running if you haven't installed the JDK, and find out what version that has. As you can see, I've actually got the Java compiler on the machine. So let's clean my environment and get rid of all my class files, and then we'll start walking through the code. The first program is similar to Dan's. It's a Hello World program. What we have here is we've written this with a mismatch between the file name, which is code1.java, and the class name, which is sect code1. And when we compile this, it compiles fine because it is proper Java. But when we try to run it, we're going to get a no class definition found, which makes perfect sense because it doesn't exist. As Dan alluded to last night, it does a smart compilation, so it actually created a class file for sect code 1, which is what our class was called, as opposed to code one, which was what the file was called. So it wasn't where I was expecting it. So the next thing we do is we correct this. The file name and the class name match. We didn't really need to do this. We could have done this before by just running Java sect code one instead, and it runs hello world as one would expect from that code. Code two basically just does it's a standard program printing out a variety of things. I want to show a common pratfall or pitfall, as Dan showed last night. When you do integer division, it's truncated. So the result that went into this variable is 3.0 rather than the 3.14 blah, blah, blah that one would expect. This was corrected for by making one of the variables floating point, integer, string, standard stuff. So when we do our print lines, we're going to see. When we do our print lines, we're going to see the variables printed off one of the line. Print line gives it a carriage return at the end of the line, but otherwise it's the same as system.out.print. As you can see from the program, we do four print lines. They print four things out, not too spectacular. They're just doing string concatenation to create a string out of the double integer and string variables, just putting them all together. So this program, basically we added a little bit more to it to pretty it up a little bit. We've added some formatting so that our variables will line up a little bit nicer on our printouts. This isn't all that useful for most things, but when you're when you want something to look nice within a certain field, as I'm sure you're going to want for your Android programs, sometimes formatted printing really does make things snap a little bit more. And as we see, as you can see from the difference, this is the standard printing, and this is our formatted printing, which truncates and rounds in the case of this, expands the digits behind the decimal point for this. We said that this was eight characters. It's right padded out to eight. And everything, lines up nicely. For those of us that are more than a little anal retentive in our coding, everything looks a little bit better. But this is a trivial example. When you start using a class or working with variables in an array, this becomes a little bit more useful. And let's expand that in the next sample code. Now, this is based off of the code 11 that Dan put up for the last lecture. Instead of using one array, we use two. Uh, the The grades are now doubles. We've added a string array for the student names. But other than that, it's pretty much the same code that we saw in Dan's example. We assign values to our student grades. We assign names. We create a loop to walk through them. One of the things we set up a variable at the beginning of our loop for what the length of our array is, so that we're not constantly checking the length of the array, because it's not going to change. And in this, it's, you know, a 5-element array. It's not much of a big hit to the CPU to check, you know, to check the array length repeatedly. But in cases where you've got a massive array, the CPU hit is actual could be a little bit more. Or depending on the object, checking your in condition, you know, could be a little bit more overhead. So we basically just walk through we create a loop to walk through them. We print out the element, the student name, and then the grades. There's going to be a couple problems that we have here. One is Doug Davidson is 13 characters rather than 12 that we've got formatted for, and the 100.0 it only handles two characters before the decimal point, a decimal point, and two characters, and that will add up to that'll add up to 5. So that's going to be a little bit offset, and it's actually a little bit clearer when we look at the result from the code. So as we can see, I wish that my arms were longer. We can see that the Abbott line is one character off because of that. Davidson ran a little bit long, so everything came a little bit out of true. The other issue is that the element begins with 0 rather than the 1 that humans sort of expect when we walk through a loop. But let's see how we can clean up the code in the next version. Oops. All right, in this, basically everything's the same. The only difference is we changed our formatting. We changed it to, we left justified, and we put a cap on the full length of how long it's going to be. We extended this a little bit. And we also add 1 to the element. So the first element would be 1 rather than the 0 that the computer expects, to the 1 that we as humans tend to be a little bit more familiar with. So you can see that everything, you know, lines up nicely on the decimal points. The only issue, as we've seen, because this has a cap on how many characters it can be, this means that Mr. Davidson lost the last letter of his name, and everything's left justified is which we normally expect when we're looking at names. We expect them to be left justified, not right justified. Again, it's, you know, nothing too difficult to anyone that's done has any experience with printf. There's a list of all the formats in the API document under formatter, which I think I put at the beginning of the code. In the keynote. This is the URL to the Java API document with the full information about the formatter. So let's pull this up. And, you know, this gives you the full example of you know, what the formatting formats look like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I can't recommend the Java API documentation enough. It's you're going to find that as you're doing Android programming or any Java programming for that matter, that the you're going to turn to this an awful lot for classes that you're not familiar with, or elements and methods of classes that you are familiar with but, you know, haven't used in a while. So I cannot recommend the Java docs enough. They're a wonderful resource that that comes with the language. Let's go to our terminal window, and we'll finish walking through the code. All right, so at this point, as you can see in the previous version, we had separate arrays for the students and separate array for the grades. This time, we've added a helper class, and we set up a private helper class with public variables. We've set up a constructor to populate it with a name and a grade, and we don't really need getters and setters, but I'm putting them here for the sake of thoroughness. That we've got setters for the names, which set the name variable. Some people you don't need to return anything for a setter, but I tend to because I find this allows you to chain them to other, you know, chain your setters, but that's just me. Other people might choose to have all their setters be void returning as opposed to returning the value of the setter. And then below the setters, we've got our getters where we can get the name or the grade for that actual function. So we declare our array because we've got students, and each student has a name and a grade. Then we figure that makes up a class, so I called my variable class. So we allocate the memory, we assign variables because this is a class. Each of these has to be allocated with a new statement, and then we walk through our loop. And we print out the element, and the element of the instance of the class from the array. Oops. Move so that you can actually see me run compile. Now this, that's why. Let me do that again sorry. So we've got a whole host of error messages that came up, and the reason for that is class is a reserved word. If you remember the slides from Dan's lecture last night, you saw that he had a bunch of reserved words, of which, unsurprisingly, class is one of them. So we can't use class as a variable name without all hell breaking loose in our code, as we can see in front of us. So a simple matter to correct our code. And the only difference is that we've renamed our variable instead of class. It's now my class. Everything else, you know, is pretty much similar. And this time when we run it, we get, well, we still have some problems, but they're at least a little bit clearer. One of the problems that we have is that the element has, instead of adding one to it, has appended it. The second is the class shows the by printing out the class, what we get is the class name and a memory location. And while that's somewhat useful, it's not really going to help us figure out what's going on with our students. So we've made a we made a quick change. We added a helper function toString, and what that will do is it returns a string that gives us a name and a grade for each element for each class object. And farther down, because the plus was picked up as a concatenator operator for a string, we put it in parentheses so it become it's picked up as an addition operator for the integer. So when we run it this time, eight. Sorry about that. Now this time through, we've corrected the problem with the appending the one to the element number, and it actually correctly shows it. We now show the names of the students and their grades. And then lastly, in version 9 of the code, we changed the toString to use a formatted to create a formatted string of just the name and the grade. Oops. And in this case, it's pretty printed like we saw with the printfs. You don't need to create a toString for any of your classes, but if you're going to print them out, and I tend to be, I tend to be a little old school. So when I do my debugging, I tend to do it through log and print statements, as opposed to walking through things line by line in the debugger. I think that has to do with the fact that a lot of the Java programming I have been doing was multi-threaded, which is a little bit more of a pain to work with in the debugger. So I tend to go a little bit old school and use print statements. So I do a lot of toStrings for my classes to allow you to go through that. And that's pretty much the stuff that I wanted to go over tonight. The other things that you're gonna we can show you in the in subsequent office hours are some of the other fundamentals of the Java class. Instead of using arrays, you can use some of the Java collections, which allow you to be a little bit more create your collections of data on the fly, add more to your collection, as opposed to this way everything's pretty much added right at the beginning with an array. So this will, especially for your Android programming, you're going to want to, for example, parse an XML file or a JSON response and populate that into a data object. You're going to need to do that on the fly. And we'll go over it. We can go over that step by step, or perhaps in the Android once we get to subsequent subsequent Android sections. That's it for Java 101A. If you have any questions, we've got an office hour on Thursday night, or you can contact people on the discussion board on the class website.